Yeah, sorry to keep you waiting as
No,
well.
no worries. You guys are ahead of time. So you guys are what? Is it 5 hours ahead or 4 hours?
It is. I thought it was 5 when I looked it up.
Yeah.
We're meant to be 5 hours ahead. It's now 7:45 p.m.
Okay, so it's 3:45 here. So you're 4 hours ahead.
Three,
All
four, five, six,
right.
seven. Yeah. Oh
This is where the
man.
problem occurs.
But do you know
It's
what? We've made it this far. Let's celebrate that.
right, guys. If you don't know, they're in the UK right now. You guys are in, where are you guys at exactly?
We're just outside London in a place called St. Albans.
Okay.
Yeah.
As you can
Yeah,
tell, they're 4 or 5 hours ahead. You haven't figured that out
yeah,
yet.
yeah. Hence confusion and checking of clocks and things like that. No, we're just about 20 miles north of London where we're living at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we had daylight savings time here, so that messes up too. So it'll move everybody up an hour.
I think let's just blame the clocks for everything, I think.
Yes, we know.
Good
So,
to
guys, it's
see
pretty simple.
you
You too. What this is we're gonna have a conversation like we're doing now. We're talking music, talk shop, talk whatever comes up. I know I met you guys in Nashville. Me and my son was up there playing, and you guys played at the vegan restaurant too. Copper
Right.
Coin, Copper Branch. I can't remember the name.
Copper bronze. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the guys, you're in for a treat. These guys are super talented, and I want to get to know you guys more, and we'll get everybody else to know you too. So introduce yourself. First of all, everybody, you listen to Georgia Songbirds if you didn't know that. And we're here with Miss Elizabeth and Jameson is how they go by the name, but you guys introduce yourself.
Yeah. So I am Griff Jameson, one half of Elizabeth and Jameson. We've taken the folky tradition of going by our surnames, actually, which is quite a very a British folky thing to do, isn't it?
And
Yeah.
it's nice and confusing as well. So even more confusion. Sorry. And I'm Hannah Elizabeth. And so yeah, together we're Elizabeth and Jameson. But as we tell everyone at our gigs and things, you can pretty much call us what you want as long as it's friendly. We answer to nearly everything. So
Right.
but yeah.
And make sure to pay me at the
Yeah.
end of the night. That's all you got to do. Call me what you want. Just make sure you
Oh
pay me.
yeah, that's true.
Now,
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, we yeah, carry on, sorry.
Doctor, we're here on Zoom, guys. We're doing di video, obviously audio, digital. So my internet sucks. So there may be a lag time between us. So if you guys got to let me go at any time, let that's fine. You're not gonna hurt my feelings. We get long-winded sometimes on the show. I'm just gonna tell you right now. So, how did you guys get started?
Well, we were both in separate acts. Myself in a like a folk rock band called Fred's House, and we were touring around the region. And Hannah was in a trad folk trio, weren't you?
I was in
Yeah.
a trio called Said the Maiden, and we did lots of three-part harmonies. We were quite traditional folk music and lots of traditional songs. But myself and Griff, our two bands, would cross paths on the circuit. You know how it is yourself, I'm sure. You end up seeing the same people over and over, but sometimes you have a chance to chat, other times you just pass each other in a festival field and you wave. And occasionally we would end up on the same bill and the
Yeah.
billing, so we would have a bit more time. So we knew one another, and anyway, and the kind of music that each other did. And then Griff saw me playing some violin at a festival, and I was accompanying a guy who was doing sort of, he was a singer-songwriter, and I did a few gigs with him. And Griff wrote to me and said, "I didn't realize you were doing anything else outside of the trio. Would you play some violin for me on a couple of songs I'm doing? I'm going to put out a few songs on my own." And I said, "Yeah, go on then. I think Griff's all right. Yeah, he seems pretty cool." And so I recorded a few songs, some violin for Griff, and then we became really good friends. And then we became really, really good friends. And then yeah, we became a couple, and then we just started doing music together really properly. So
Now, if you're doing folksy, shouldn't you call it a fiddle?
well, I don't know. This is a really good question, and I don't know. I always say violin, and I did sort of study classical violin when I was younger, but I really didn't stick with that into adulthood. I don't even know what style I play. It's just my own little version of something. I don't even know. But I say I play the violin. But when we do, if we do any kind of tunes and I do a little bit of a, what I'd say is a fiddle tune, I'd say it comes out more rootsy. I suppose that would be fiddle playing. I don't even know if any of your listeners can just define for me whether it's a violin. When they hear our stuff, maybe they can tell me if they would say violin or fiddle, because I don't even know.
Folksy music, I think they would call you a fiddle. I had a lady. I played music in Atlanta one time, and she would come to these open mics at a Red Light Cafe, and her name is Latanya Peoples. She played with like an orchestra, and I asked her that same question. I said, "So, what's the difference in a fiddle and a violin?" She goes, "It's just whatever song you're playing."
Well, I think it's the same. I think it's the same physical instrument most of the time. Mm-hmm. There are like six-string fiddles that have special names and things that I don't know much about, I have to say. But other than that, yeah, I think maybe it's a style. It's the style you're playing, I guess.
Yeah. So like you could play it in a bluegrass band, kind of what you guys are, a little folksy, like your bluegrass, it goes to a fiddle.
Yeah, a little bit. More like Appalachian like fiddle. Yeah. I really love that kind of playing, like lots of double stopping across multiple strings. I really like that style, and I'd say that's fiddle playing. So we've dabbled a little bit in a few tunes and something that I would say a bit more fiddle-like more recently. So I think maybe I'm starting to get a little bit more fiddly.
Now, like I said, I met these guys in Nashville, and you guys are obviously across the pond. So do you guys come to the States very often to play?
That was the first time. It's my first time ever in America, that was, actually.
Really?
So, yeah. Yes.
And what a great first time it was.
It was awesome.
We won't ever forget it. First time we've ever shared our music in the States, isn't it?
Exactly.
And it was quite by chance that it happened in a way.
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you guys now, if you ever come back if you ever come to Georgia, let me know. I can get you guys some playing stuff. There's a venue here called Mad Life that I work at and do security stuff for, but I'm also helping Greg. We're trying to get guests of the Georgia Songbirds on a patio, and it's like a paid gig. So like they'll pay you, he'll work all that out for you, like a 3-hour set. But like we're going to do initially, we're going to try to get like just to give a couple guests at a time, like an hour set, give them a little bit of money, feed them, and then audition them for the patio. You guys, I can guarantee you get the patio gig regardless. That I know that. Right. I heard you guys play. You're very entertaining.
Oh, guys, all your listeners, you heard it. It's a verbal contract. Okay. Well, we would definitely let you know if we're coming.
See, because I mean, I love Nashville. Everybody goes to Nashville to play. I get that. But you go up there, you get a couple songs, usually get a couple of songs. Bobby's was different. You got like a set, like a 30-minute set, which was really cool, or three songs, whatever it was. It was more than you normally get if you go play. Like you go other places, you get a song, that's it. You can't really get your sound out that way.
No, I agree.
This is exactly what we... we digested our experiences, you know, obviously after, and we were really, really grateful to have that 30 minutes to create some kind of set with some kind of arc in it. It makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Definitely. Because we also played, I guess, what was called a traditional kind of Nashville songwriters circle as well, where you play a song and then the person next to you plays a song. Then the person over there plays a song, and then it comes back to you, which I don't know. I guess it's obviously traditional to Nashville. It wasn't comfortable for me because you weren't in control of the arc of the set, like Hannah was saying. You know, somebody else plays a ballad. You know, where do you go after that? It didn't feel like you could feed into the next song, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because we do here is more of you get like a 30-minute set, you play. Like they have again at Mad Life, an undiscovered artist showcase that they do. You'll get three songs, and then the winner gets like their video done, like high def videos, like five cameras watching you guys. I mean, it's pretty cool. Yeah. But like I said, the patio set, the thing I'm doing is I'm just bringing like maybe three artists at a time as a 3-hour gig. So each one would get an hour to play their music.
Wow. Oh no, that's a good set.
We really, really enjoyed Bobby Ray's the Monday night, and then the Wednesday at the Bad Axe.
say that probably.
Sounds great in my accent, I'm sure. It's a very, very bad accent.
Between your accent and mine, it doesn't matter. Bad axe, bad axe. Sounds the same.
And we really, really enjoyed. We loved meeting Bobby Ray. And everyone that we met at those two sort of sessions or showcases, I don't know what you'd call them really. It was just really, really nice community feeling, and people were interested in one another, and you had time to talk after, and you know, and we looked up everyone that was up, like including yourself, and now we're connected with people on social media and things. It felt like we really had a chance to meet people at those things, and that was, we were really grateful to be able to do a set at both those nights. So thanks to Bobby Ray, and also to our friend Helen, who had a connection, and she was able to write to Bobby Ray as well and ask him if we could play. And he didn't know who we were, so he could have said, nah, I don't really think that's a good idea. But he gave us a go. So we thank you very much for having us as well.
Yeah, Bobby Ray, if you guys don't know who we're talking about, he is, he's been on a show before. He did a album review. And things that we do here, obviously, we do a conversation interview style like you guys are doing right now. But also we do album reviews, and it's not typical. I'm not going to critique anybody's music. That's an opinion. What does it matter? It doesn't matter to me. What we do is I like stories. I'm a songwriter. I want to hear stories of the songs, and then we listen to them, and that's it. So he came on with him and his wife, Adrian, and they came on and did a album review up at the house. If you guys ever make it to Georgia, you're welcome to come here. We'll take you outside of the gazebo. But it was funny because his was like, he had like a long album. She goes, you got a long album. She, Adrian, just gave him a hard time. It was funny. But that's who she's talking about, Bobby Ray.
Now, I love it.
Explain a little bit, because I've talked to a couple people from across the pond, but it's always interests me, the music scene. So kind of describe your guys' music scene out there.
It's having been in different cities. So I lived in a place called Cambridge, which is famous for its university and things. That's when we were kind of getting together, and having been a part of that music scene, that was kind of thriving, because I think it was because it's such a university city. It kind of, you know, you have a lot more live music, you have a lot more venues, places where touring acts will pass through. And the city that we're in now, it feels like there's kind of one open mic and there's one folk club out of town, but they don't really kind of talk to each other. It's weird how geographically the scene changes completely. And I think we're fortunate enough that we've been doing it a while, that we can keep working, and everything is pretty close in the UK compared to you guys. So, you know, we can keep playing gigs, whether it's like we drive an hour and then we're in a completely different music scene and we can introduce ourselves there, or and then we drive like another half hour in another direction and then we're in a different scene altogether. You know, you have completely different audiences for these things. So
people say that the audiences differ as well, in even in a much smaller place. If you go up north in the UK, that you'll get a different sort of atmosphere, a different vibe or if you, from when you go down south or to the west. And I think that's true from what we've experienced. You'll get sort of different energy, different reaction to different songs, which is really interesting as well. So it does change, even though it's on a much smaller scale. Changes more than you might think, you know, and sometimes we'll get more of a following in one area of the country, and I don't know why that is, whether they connect with the songs and the stories more than someone else does. We're living really close to London, like we said, and I mean the scene there, you'd think that there would be loads of opportunities for people like us maybe, but in fact they're sort of few and far between because it's saturated. Maybe similarly to Nashville in a way, where there's so much going on, and whether that's grassroots venues like the kind of ones we play, folk and acoustic clubs we play, art centres, folk festivals, acoustic music festivals, things like that. But you'd think that there would be loads of openings there. But in a way, it's the opposite, because it's very, very hard to sell tickets and promote shows when there's just so much on. And there's too much to choose from.
Yeah.
But we do have one venue in London we'll go to and we can get an audience, but it needs a lot of promotion. So that's also interesting to consider.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's great. It's just really varied.
Yeah.
It can change half an hour down the road.
Yeah.
Different place.
Definitely.
Yeah, so here in Georgia, I'm 3 hours from Nashville. So it took me 3 hours to drive up there. And Nashville has changed a lot, because Nashville used to be just about original music. And now there's this, and it's happened there too, there's this craze about doing tributes and cover bands. And I've never been big on doing covers, just because I can never do it like the original. I'm not even going to try. I mean, if I'm going to do a cover, I'll do it my way. But they've got like a role, like they're sending people to these schools up there now. I had a couple guests that have been on the show that tell me they're doing this university where all they do is they teach them covers. And so they play nothing but covers in Nashville. And I'm like, man, that kind of defeats the purpose of Nashville, honestly, to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do you think that part of the reason people might do that is because it's maybe, is it because they can earn more steady money?
That's what it is, money.
Yeah.
Exactly what it is.
I was going to say, I didn't want to say that and it sound like, no, that's, but I think, because we do function gigs, cover gigs, and we have a really quite a good cover set.
Yeah.
And we can play covers music for over 2 hours, for example. Mm. So we could play in a pub here or a bar. But if we play covers, if it's just background music, doesn't really matter if people are listening or not. Mm. Weddings and things, we've played at people's weddings, things like that. But unfortunately, we tend to get paid more.
Yeah,
for those live performances, because you're providing a different service, and I suppose maybe it is to do with that. Sadly, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's the, I was talking to the owners.
Sad or not really.
When we do those things, so when we do that sort of work, we go out as under a different name, actually, so that we're not. You know, we don't kind of associate it with our original stuff, if that makes sense.
I got to know the cover name. What's your cover band name then?
we call ourselves the Rosewoods when we're covered.
That's funny. I tell people that I always lead this to somewhere, because when I do cover songs, I give the guests a cover challenge, and you're welcome to give me one as well. I don't care. I have no problem. Mm-hmm. And there's no time limit. You do it at your leisure whenever you want to. And I'll think of something that will fit your guy's style, maybe.
All right. Okay.
But a little different. But do it your way. Like, I may pick like a fast Metallica song for you guys to poke it up or something, right?
I'll
think of that as we get going. And I said, time limit.
I like that idea. Yeah.
Yes.
I had people do that. I will never ask a guest of something I won't do. So I said, give me one, shoot it. I don't mind. The ones that I've got back are so crazy out there. I'm like, one person gave me ABBA, the Wind Takes Off. And I'm like, you guys never heard me sing. You want me to do ABBA? So I was like, all right. I tuned the guitar so low so it make it like a growly song. And I worked on it. And then that guy from American Idol did it. I'm like, I'm not putting this out now. That guy was killed us, because it was a Winner Takes All. I mean, I'm not even gonna touch it. One band gave me Whitney Houston. And I'm like, are you crazy? And like, I think the song is I'll Have Nothing. And and anybody knows me 3-4 times will mess me up every single time. I just bawl like a baby, like, nope, I don't want to mess with it. I can't do it. And then one lady gave me Purple Rain, and I did. And I released it on TikTok, and I did the same thing for your guys when you get the video. Send me a video. We'll tag them.
Okay.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Let's hear one of your guys' song. What I'm going to do is I'm going to share the screen so you guys can see it.
Oh.
All right.
This is beyond me, technology-wise. Wow. This is very good. I'm impressed.
So
Our little picture. That's so funny.
I got long hair there.
Yeah, but listen, that's not the same guy.
I've got short hair. Wow, what's going on?
So I have a question before we get to music, though, because you guys are a couple. It's got to be challenging to do songs together, especially when you're writing, because you're both writing, right?
No comment. Sorry, we can talk now.
She's waiting for you to say the right word, Griff, so she doesn't have
to. It's all right.
I feel like we honestly, at the beginning of our musical and personal relationship, we didn't really know if either one of those things was a thing, and it just organically happened. So they kind of happened at the same time alongside. So as you know, when you begin any relationship, professional or personal, you have those moments when you have to work things out, and you might have those hurdles. And I think we were just doing all at the same time. So, you know, we're still here, which is good.
Still here.
You know, and but I think, I don't know, I've learned a lot from Griff. I'm not just saying this to make it sound good. I've learned a lot from Griff about songwriting, because I only did rearrangements of traditional songs before. So it was traditional songs, and we did our own versions of those. So I was much stronger as an arranger than as a writer. And I'd kind of dabbled, but I didn't really know how to do it. And I hadn't written anything on my own or anything ever. I'd had a go a couple of times. But Griff's always been a songwriter since, I don't know when you first started, but he's got a brain probably like yours, Jesse, that's, it's creative, and it's always got an idea at the back of the next thing, or an idea for something. And that's brilliant. And that's not necessarily how my brain works, but I think that makes us a good partnership. So yeah, I think it's worked out, luckily, that we both have good roles within the songwriting relationship. And Griff will bring an idea, and then I'll help piece it together. Mm. So it works out okay.
Mm. Yeah. See, my wife doesn't song, right? So we're in the middle of a fight. Now, wait a minute, say that again. I'm writing this. It'll stop an argument in a heartbeat.
I mean, do you know what? I mean, a lot of songs end up being about personal experiences, I suppose. And I think you can kind of use it as an outlet for all sorts of things. So yeah, if we did ever have a really bad argument, perhaps it would have led to a really good song.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to let, I'll just leave it up to listeners. They can see if they think any of these songs might have been born that way. Let's leave them.
Well, like I said, we have everything you guys got listed on Spotify. We are open to, so whatever song you guys want to do first, just let me know, and we will share that with everybody. What's the first song?
All right. Well, let's be shameless, and we will plug our brand new one, which is Old Town.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, shameless plug, is nothing wrong with it. So Old Town. So tell the story behind Old Town.
All right. Well, whenever we kind of record, we try and have a bit of a theme running through like a handful of songs, whether it's the EP or an album. And the idea behind this is these are the first couple of songs from our upcoming album. So we've recorded this all ourselves at home as a bit of a fundraiser for our second album, like a crowdfunding thing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so this song is based on the area where I grew up, which is like a very industrial part of the world. And it used to have so my town was a steel town, and the other towns next door, they were coal mining towns or iron towns, this sort of thing. And like a lot of these places, it's founded on that industry, and the houses all pop up and the communities are all gravitated around that industry. But then the industry closes and disappears, and you've still got all this community there kind of, I don't know, aching to do something. And they become quite somber places in the end. And so the artwork on the CD, that's the old steelworks as it was in my town of Ebbw Vale in South Wales. And we just wanted to kind of talk about all those industries in the South Wales valleys, whether it was a coal mine, whether it was a factory. We've kind of called it the factory, so that it's a bit more universal, so that it's not just about a coal mine, it's not just about a steelworks. but the theme throughout is the same, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to mute us and I'll play it. So you guys just give me a thumbs up when you hear it.
Okay.
I'm teaching them something new. It's
not
very often. It's not very often I get to do that. Usually I got to be taught.
Where the factory stood in the old town, where the smoke would catch fire with the air, where they'd work and they'd stay till the end of their day, and a part of them will remain there. Stroll with no thought of their lives, working harder than hell, though it's harder to tell as the light fades away from their eyes. But divided, united, they'll fall.
Here we go.
Hey.
Hey. They found the unmute button. Thank you.
This is magical stuff going on.
There you go.
This big magic box stuff that people wear. Now, I heard you guys play this live, and I'm telling you, I loved this song when I heard it. Going back, listen, you said recorded it at home, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You guys did an amazing job recording.
That's good. Thank you.
That's all Griff as well. I'm just going to say that out loud. It's good.
That's good.
well, your fiddle or violin, whatever you want to call it, and harmonies add a lot to that song.
Yeah.
A lot. And I'm sitting there listening to it and made me think of Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Like the first version I ever heard of was Guns N' Roses, but I know Bob Dylan did it, and it reminded me of that. That I think it was the harmonies. It just reminded me. One of my favorite songs.
That's brilliant.
I think I have your guys' cover challenge. I'm sitting here listening to it, and I'm like, do I want to give them a sad song that they can just make sadder? Because anytime you put a violin or a fiddle to something, it makes it sad. It's like, oh my God, it's so sad. I want to cry. So I'm thinking, you guys ever heard of John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They did. If you ever seen the movie Eddie and the Cruisers, they're the whole music behind it. They do a lot of 80s stuff too. Well, my favorite band, my band was modeled after them because I love saxophone and electric guitar.
So
I'm sitting here and I'll let you guys choose which one. Cause I'm just going to be selfish and like, I just want to hear you one of them. I don't care. Tender years.
Okay. Cool.
Either that one or Season in Hell.
Okay.
Okay. I'm making a note.
Have you guys ever heard him?
I don't know those songs.
No,
but you know what?
We're going to play a snippet of it right now because I can't.
Okay. Yeah.
You want to lock in the decision, don't you?
So this one right here, Season in Hell, is where's it at?
Yeah.
There it goes. It's the John Cafferty and Beaver Brown Band. And I just think with your guys with the fiddle, because normally it's like an electric guitar that does it.
Okay.
You guys can hear that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And I thought I'll edit some of this down. But with your fiddle playing to take the place of the electric, have you guys do it? Would be awesome. It's a great song, right? I'll let you see my band stuff in a minute. All right, you'll see the similarities too. I love solos. You gotta do that long. I'll let you guys listen to it. I won't do the whole song. Have you heard Tender Years?
Okay.
This whole band, my favorite band. So either one of those songs.
Okay. All right.
Even though I'm leaning to Season of the Hill, you guys can choose.
Okay. Oh, bless you. All right.
I like this game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, we have a Guns N' Roses song in our
Yeah.
Which Guns N' Roses?
We do Sweet Child of Mine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't know if that's the most sort of rocky one. I don't know, is it?
Yeah.
I was thinking, is this going to work? And then, I think it does work. So,
yeah.
I would be excited to try something different. I love covers when people make it their own. I'm the same as you. If I'm going to cover a song, I think you put your own stamp on it and make it, turn it, twist it a bit and make it different. Mm-hmm. I like that idea.
See, I do like a bar game. You talk about when you play in bars, is like, all right, if you guys can tell me the title of the song before I get to the hook, I'll buy you a beer. But if not, you gotta buy me a beer.
That's a good idea.
And yes. So I'll do like When Doves Cry, and most of the time they won't get it because the way I do it, it's so different because I'm never gonna play like Prince. So it's like, okay. Usually by the end of it, I'm drunk, so I gotta stop. So no
more games. So when do we let you know about our choice, and when you need to hear it at some point? What we need to
whenever.
What? I need to write in my diary. I need to practice. Like,
whenever. I don't ever give anybody time limits. I've only had one band or duo. They did it right in here at the studio. They did a Janis Joplin song. I'm like, really? You did it? I mean, he has a banjo and a guitar player, and they bluegrass the hell out of it. I'm like, wow. I'm like, you could have had time. Now we got it now. I was like, okay. I'm glad you got the confidence because I couldn't do that. So what do you guys got going on now with your duo?
Well, we're in the middle of promoting that that song, and we're getting quite nice radio play here in the UK as well, actually, which is good. Okay. So, yeah, even tonight, while we're chatting to you, we should be getting played on BBC Radio Wales, which is a national station, which is really good.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
Yeah, and it should be Old Town as well. So yeah, you know, who knows? It may have been on at the same time. That's kind of weird. Weird.
Right.
We'll listen back later and see. Yeah. It's either this week or next week. We're not sure, we're busy. We've got a string of dates together to go out and about and play as much as possible, mm-hmm. as we could fit in with our new EP, and we're going to start fundraising for an album. I don't know if you can see that. We do have,
we're old school.
We've got a real CD in it. I feel like we'll get your postal address and we'll have to send you one over.
Yes,
absolutely. Thank you. I'd love that.
We still love CDs. I don't know. Not everyone can play them anymore. Their cars don't have CD players, which amazes me. Like, but you know, you're meant to hook your phone up to them and things.
Yeah.
But we still get CDs done, and we take them out to these gigs. And a lot of our audience, the demographic, they are people that like having a physical copy of our songs, and we like putting together the artwork and making it a package and a real, you know, physical thing. So we're going to take out our CDs onto a sort of string of dates through the next 3 months, and sing our songs and sell our CDs and hopefully raise a little bit of money for recording an album, which we could start at the end of the year or early next year, maybe, depending on how things go. And we got some more songs to write as well.
Well, yeah.
to go on said album. So we'll be doing that too.
Yeah.
Now, do you guys ever co-write with anybody or just each other?
No, we I think we started introducing it to because I kind of did my homework through lockdown to get into recording.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we've become self-sufficient at that. That I've ended up recording other people and always in, you know, and then essentially we become a bit of a backing band for whoever it is that we're recording. So that, you know, we add like layers of harmonies and Hannah's violin, that sort of thing. And so there was a lady we started recording with a young lady called Melody Causton. And I think that's the first, I've always co-written with whoever's in the band with me.
Mm-hmm.
We never really, I don't know, written with anyone.
Like an outsider.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's something that I think is different. Perhaps, I don't know if it's just Nashville or other cities and other places, that that's quite a big thing.
Yeah.
Co-writing, specifically getting together with people in order to do that. But I don't think it's quite as common here. I feel like you co-write with people that you're in a band with, or a duo, or or something, you don't go out and say, do you know what, we should get together and write, because we're both good writers and we should write together.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it's as engineered or something.
Yeah.
But we last year we did do that for the first time. And it was, but she's very busy. We were quite busy.
Yeah.
And we were thinking, was this a good idea? We need to actually, and then we met up and we ended up drinking tea and eating biscuits for half of the time. Probably mainly my fault.
Yeah.
The productivity was going down and we just ended up having a social. So we'd have to be a bit more, what's the word, disciplined to be more productive. But when you get on with people so well, it's quite hard to get down to work sometimes.
Well, see, that's the fun part. I mean, that's when you do co-write, because Nashville is the place that you go in there, you have to do it. Everybody does it. And not every state does it. Georgia has a hard time with that too, because I've always been a big proponent of co-writing, because I mean, I know I have my life. I was a heathen. I'm pretty much, that's the style that I know, right? But not everybody knows that. So like, I wrote a rock song with this, I don't know if you guys knew what Hellstorm is, the band Hellstorm.
Oh, right. I know the name. Yeah, yeah.
I wrote a song that was, me and my daughter were watching Grease, and I'm thinking, what if Hellstorm did the hand jive? And so I went and I took some chords from the hand jive and I made my own song out of it.
And all right.
Cool. I had a local singer here. Her name is Bree Fox, an amazing singer. She just nailed the damn thing. And it was a rock song that I wrote. And it's like, she sang that. And I'm trying to get it to Hellstorm. So Hellstorm, if you're listening, I'm telling you, I love co-writing and I love writing for other people. I got my own style, but I like writing. I'm doing that with Georgia. I'm making a collaboration album of local songwriters, the songs I write or co-write, and then somebody else sings them. Because songwriters do have a hard time with like sharing their music. It's like, no, it's my baby. You can't see it. You think it's ugly. Don't look at my baby.
Actually, that's interesting. I think maybe, and this wasn't that recent, it was a long time ago, so I'm sure nobody might not even know these people anymore. Mm. I feel like Griff said that there was someone way back when he was doing something, and he's like, he wanted to kind of, you know, take the song and do something with it, but that person was hanging on to it so tight that you couldn't do anything with it, because they were holding on so tight.
Yeah.
It was just their song, and you weren't going to get a look in.
That
must happen often. maybe.
And ask some good advice for songwriters that are listening to this episode, or anybody, is you've got to be able to let it go, because it's easy. Like everybody has their own vision. They want to do this. They have experiences. They know what they want. However, your guys' experiences will be different than mine. Like, I grew up in a biker family. That was just my dad. He was a biker. That's the stuff I know. Right. For me to sing some kind of lovey-dovey song would be hard, because I'm like, my lovey-dovey stuff usually involve leather and motorcycles. So I'd have to dig deeper. But if somebody who has that, you know, it works. Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't work. I mean, and it's like dating. Like, when you do a co-write, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe you sing tea and biscuits. That's fine.
Who doesn't still like an enjoyable time for – I was thinking, I feel like I have had fewer experiences co-writing than Griff has, because he's always been a songwriter and has worked with a few other people.
Mm.
And I've done all my songwriting with Griff.
Mm.
So I remember also you saying that it's really interesting and quite exciting when you have an idea for a song and you think you've shaped it, and then you take it to your band for the other people to kind of finish it and co-write, and it changes it and transforms it. And it ends up sounding nothing like you first thought, but it's positive, and it turned, and you thought, I didn't expect that to shape like that. I love it.
Yeah.
And without their input, you wouldn't have heard that version of the song. Yeah. That must be really a really interesting process to have happen, as long as you like it, I suppose.
Well, you just got to be open. I mean, everything in music is subjective anyway. So that's why I said, when you get your album done, let me know. We'll do an album review, and it's not going to be a critique. I'm not going to tell you, oh, this is horrible, this is great. I'm not going to do anything. Yeah. I'm just like, let's hear the stories of the song. Let's listen to the songs.
Yeah.
The songs will speak for themselves. I don't have to speak for them. You don't have to speak for them. People either like them or they don't. That's it. There's no either or. It's just, you know, you like it or you don't.
Yeah. We'll do that.
And let me know. I also run a radio station, online radio station, the Georgia Songbirds Radio. And when this episode comes out, I'll have one of your songs put into rotation in the countdown. You're playing actually in the UK. There's a couple people that play it. Kay Cook Abbott in FRH Radio. She plays it.
Oh, good.
Ramona, I'm sorry, Ramona and I can't remember the other name. They play it. They're in the UK. So we have a couple stations that play it. It's not just mine. And it's a fan based vote. So what I do is I put it out and I give, I send out a little poll link for all the artists. They can share it. I'll share it. And if you last 12 weeks, then what I do is I officially retire the song, which means I just pull it out of rotation on the countdown, but it's still on all the Spotify playlists. It'll still be shared with everybody that I know. I try to promote as much as I can. But
yeah,
there's a radio station in Paris called My Indie Radio, ran by Muriel, that will do a featurette. So your song, if it lasts 12 weeks, will play. You get a little featurette in Paris too.
Nice.
That's brilliant. Griff's right. He's making little scribbly notes.
The same thing.
All right, there you go. It's got to be done.
Got scribbly notes, and that's why we still do pen and paper. I'm glad that, that other people still have a pen and paper.
Yeah.
I say I have my book for songs. I've got laminated. I hate to say it. I'm one of those
guys. Right.
I laminate it. I know most people carry their phone and their scroll. I got my book. If I remember, that way I can practice it. I didn't ask this, but what got you guys into music?
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, in Wales, it's quite a traditional thing to be like, you've got to sing for your supper. You've got to do something. And my dad was in bands when he was younger, and my mother was a music teacher. So we were breastfed music. My brother and I, you know, my dad taught my brother guitar, and then my brother taught me. And so, yeah, I think we just always had music. We were always pulling out our parents' records and just like, you know, we would take it in shifts, really, where one of us would just be watching the TV on the Saturday night with our folks, and the other person would have their headphones next to the record player in the same room and just be like this in the corner of the room. Like one week it would be my brother, then the next week it would be me, and you know, it was whoever got there first, really. Or if you were just in that headspace, yes, that was me anyway. But yeah,
I think I've had a similar experience as a child. However, because we grew up in completely different areas of the country, in Wales, I was where we are now, just quite close to London. But at home, there was always music on. There was different types of music. Both my mum and dad love music, but different kinds. Like my mum was listening to classical music a lot, and plays a piano and clarinet and recorder. And my dad loves, he's just such a music fan, but he never plays an instrument, but he just absolutely loved listening to it, vinyl records, and always nice and loud. I always appreciated that. He had a good sound system and it was always on loud. And I think that even that, not everybody gets to experience that. And my two brothers also are music lovers. So everyone was playing music, and I just had the opportunity to have music lessons at school. And I think my mum, they'd said, you know, have a go at something, have a go at an instrument. You know, it's good to have a go. I just feel so lucky now that they, you know, were able to give us that chance to learn an instrument. And each one of us just had a go at something. And I never thought I'd stick with the violin. I thought I'd probably give it up.
Yeah.
I thought, well, I don't know if this is for me, but I really wanted to have a go, and sort of stuck with it on and off through my teenage years. So, yeah, I think without having those music lessons at school and always listening to music, it's like a musical environment. I feel really lucky to have grown up like that, actually, and have been exposed to it.
I think I was always exposed to it, but the moment I kind of really, I don't know, I guess kind of got turned on to music in that other way was basically my brother was like best friends with like the coolest kid in school. And I remember him bringing round a copy of Rubber Soul by the Beatles. And this was on CD. And I was just a bit weirded out because like my brother and I, we loved the Beatles. We used to watch Yellow Submarine, the movie, you know, like on repeat, and just like we thought, oh no, that's quite a sad thing to like old music, you know, and like kids at school would kind of like, you know, go, oh my God, you don't like anything new. And I just remember being like, "You're the coolest kid. You like the Beatles?" And he was like, "Yeah, the Beatles are brill." And then when they kind of went, they went out skateboarding or something, I kind of sneakily stole this copy and put it on and put my headphones on. And I skipped to Norwegian Wood. And the moment that guitar kind of kicks in and the sitar, I was like, wow. And then, yeah, I'm gone.
Well, being in UK, I got to ask the question, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
Well, I would choose Beatles personally, but I love them both. I love them both.
I think that's quite a hard question for you, really. Yeah. I think I like both. I'm not as big a fan of either as I think Griff is, but yeah. If I had to pick one to like listen to, you know, forever, I would pick the Beatles as well.
All right.
I think I know more of their music.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like both. I just like to say I like both. I'm not taking sides.
Love their new one though, the Stones. You heard that? It's really good.
I haven't heard a new one.
Oh yeah.
It's a really good, you know, actually McCartney is on there as well. He's playing bass on another track, you know, so.
Something for you to look up as well. Yeah. What about you? Let's throw the question at you.
Beatles or Stones?
Stones.
All right, okay.
I'm more of a rocker. I mean, look, I'm country as hell, so it comes out whatever I do is country. But I love the sound of rock. I mean, the Beatles have a couple songs that I like, but I could listen to the Rolling Stones.
Yes,
all day long.
Yeah, fair enough.
But, you know, they're both all right.
They've done all right, haven't they?
They've done okay. So, you know, they're all right, I suppose.
You know,
they've had minor
they're
success.
So underground, aren't they?
See, for Southern, you would ask Skinner or Zeppelin. That would be.
Okay. Really? Zeppelin are that big there?
Yeah, Led Zeppelin and Lynyrd Skynyrd are the ones that they were always kind of like, who would you choose? I'm like, well, I got to go with
Skynyrd. I would always be Skynyrd for, you know.
Oh, we had arguments in school over who. Oh, no, Zeppelin's better. No, Skynyrd. Because they're like, Skynyrd's for rednecks. I'm like, I'm a redneck. I like it.
I am a redneck.
And that's why I like it. My God, you know what? Over here we had, in the 90s,
was it 90s?
Almighty feud between Oasis and Blur.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, of Oasis and Blur.
Oasis. Everybody know Wonderwall, Champagne Supernova?
Yeah. Okay.
And there was this head-to-head for who was going to have the number one album in the country. And it was like people were proper fighting. Scraps in the school playground.
Yeah.
Are you actually cool? Like, I'm going to break up with you if you choose that one. I think I was a bit young for that then. Yeah. But I remember it being a big deal.
It was.
Oasis won. They got number one.
I think the war that they did, Blur got the number one record. This is when charts mattered.
Yeah, they mattered. That's true.
Yeah, they don't anymore, do they?
there's a great documentary about that, like the indie kind of, what do you call it?
Britpop.
Britpop kind of era, if you're interested in that part of like the music history here.
Oh, yeah, I love music.
Yeah, we'll have to send you a link over to watch that.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, please like Chris. This is the kind of nerdy conversation we would have had if we'd had longer to chat at the Copper Branch that night. You know, we would have ended up talking about this, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
See, here in the States, when Oasis came out, it was Oasis and Bush. That was the
Bush. Yeah.
Because Bush was so much bigger in America than they were here. You know, they really didn't cut it here at all.
But
did
I knew
they?
Of yeah, them, but yeah. I can't remember it being as big.
Because I remember reading an interview with Gavin Rossdale. That was his name, wasn't it?
Yep.
And he wasn't he married to like Gwen Stefani as well?
Yep.
Yeah, and he was saying that, you know, in America, he's like playing stadiums, and then he would come here, and they would be like way down the bill. You know, on these like festival evenings and stuff, and just be like, but I want to make it big because I'm British. I want to be big in Britain, you know. And everyone was just a bit like, it's all right.
That's funny. I told you we get sidetracked on this show. This is just conversations. Stuff. I know I had a guy came on the show. He's a buddy of mine now. I met him. He was over in the UK playing. He's blues. His name is Hughes Taylor. He's a local guy here, amazing guitar player. And he said he was going over there, and the rock scene that they have is so crazy. He said the people and over there just love that music.
Yeah. Exactly. I think in my last band, we did manage to play a couple of rock festivals. We kind of qualified a little bit. I was on the acoustic, but we did have an electric guitar, and drums and bass. And, you know, I think we were kind of like a little bit Fleetwood Mac, you know, okay, what I mean? So we did qualify. We weren't like the headliners or anything like that. We weren't loud or big enough for that, but we would hold our own in the afternoon of a rock festival. You know, yeah, it was great. But yeah, it's such a great scene, and I loved like rock and metal when I was growing up as well. It's just, I think it encourages the fanatic in anyone who's into music, that sort of scene, you know, because like I remember having like a denim jacket with all patches sewn onto me, you know what I mean? And I loved it, loved all that. And just, yeah, it brings out the collecting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
See, I remember when I was in school, I got made fun of because I would listen to all kinds of music. I mean, I listened to Bad Company, one of my favorite bands, the Eagles.
Wow.
I love the Eagles. They literally called me a generation gap because I was going to blasting. Everybody else was blasting like rap and stuff, which I did listen to in the 90s. I love Tupac. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. He's great. But yes, I remember blasting Bad Company, just coming in, parking in my truck, and it's pulling.
Nice.
Oh.
Yeah. Well,
let's hear another one of your guys' song. Which one do you want to do next?
Oh, wow. Ooh. What do you want to do?
I don't know. We could go back in time to an earlier song of ours. I don't know if we did many of our older songs when we were over in Nashville because we were excited about our new ones.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, should we do Picture, but should we do the one off Stories Retold?
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Right. Exactly. Stories Retold.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, so this is the first kind of like proper bit of recording we did at home. And this is where in the middle of lockdown. So because we couldn't, we had a whole tour booked for our first album. And obviously 2020 happened and all our gigs kind of disappeared. So this is where I was like, oh, right, maybe if we do something. And these are kind of live recordings and alternative versions of songs from our first album. So this was my first dalliance into recording a mix in us. You know,
it was it was a really good project to have while we were stuck at home. And these were just some of the songs on our first album that we thought might be nice to have an alternative version of them.
Yeah.
And I think we'll go for Picture.
Yeah.
And that song, this is a song that was inspired by trips to a northern seaside town in the north of England in Yorkshire and called Whitby. And there's a historically quite famous pioneering photographer around the Victorian era who his photos were quite renowned for showing the very real life of the working people of the town, the fishermen, the fisherwives and the children and the people just in their home, often quite poor working people. And so his pictures are accessible online and in lots of books. And so this is based a little bit around that style of photograph. And that's it really.
Yeah.
But this is the retold version.
The retold. That, I'm on mute us and play it. Just give me a thumbs up when you hear it.
Cool. Okay. Thanks.
If the weather turns to rain, It doesn't matter all the same, I'll still take this picture of you. Caught you blinking in the sun, might not be perfect when it's done, but I'll still have this picture of you.
Instrument are you playing? Is that on a MIDI or something? But what is that? What is that other instrument in there?
Oh yeah, it was just a Hammond organ plug in with it. Yeah. Because when we did it, when we used to do it live, Hannah used to play an accordion. And we just wanted to mix it up for that alternate version.
You didn't bring the accordion to Nashville, did you?
No, I felt like, I don't know how that would have traveled. I haven't got a hard case for it. I actually used to play it a lot more frequently in my old trio, and it suited the sound a bit. We kind of carried it over and played it a bit with Griff and Elizabeth and Jameson. It's on our first album quite a bit, and it makes it a little different, the sound, but I've kind of stepped away from it, really. But I have played it for a few other people and recorded it for a few other people's stuff, but I'm quite a basic level, let's say, of playing. I'm not doing anything fancy, but it's a really nice layer to have. It lent itself well as a it's a really nice texture to have. And I found it fitted really nicely in with our other sounds. So I didn't bring it with me. That would have been one extra bit of hold luggage I would have had to check in anyway, wouldn't it?
I'm always afraid of flying with my guitar. I'm like, because you can't really put it in the bin above you, and I don't want to put it in check. It's like, because they just throw that around. I'm like, no.
Yeah. I didn't take my most precious guitar. I bought a guitar secondhand via Facebook, and took that in a hard case that I also got. It's like secondhand as well. So yeah.
That's very smart, because I think I took my guitar once, and I had a Gibson, and it was a hard shell, so I had the hard case so that it wouldn't get scratched. And I remember locking it. I'm like, I'm locking this. They're not opening my guitar case. I was just like, I was the whole plane ride like, hurry up and land. Don't crash, but hurry up and land.
I bet.
So what do you guys got? You said you're playing around town there. You got your album. You're trying to work on your album. What do you got new coming out? You got anything planned for 2024?
We've got like a few good summer festivals coming up as well, which is good. So with our CD, so we're going around promoting that for the next few months. But we're fortunate enough we're on the bill of is a festival called Bestival over here, and that has like some really big names on it, and we're not on the main stage or anything, but the fact that we're there, and I mean it's like a city in a field, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, I think it's like a quarter the size of Glastonbury sort of thing, you know, but Glastonbury is humongous, so it's still. It's a really big deal for us anyway. And Yeah, we were excited about that, you know, going there and staying over. And then, you know, the moment we finish our sets, we're punters and we're just off, you know, and just gonna explore and gorge on that sort of music in the in a field in Shropshire. And yeah, there's another one in down in
I think
Devon, isn't there?
there's two festivals, same name, but different weekends. So you get to do it twice, which I think is a great idea. We're
See,
excited. Yeah, we're excited about playing live in the summer for festivals and things.
I am looking forward to the Banana Pudding Festival. I don't know why. Actually,
Oh, really?
I do know why, because I love banana
I
pudding.
think I'd look forward to that festival.
I could. I got on this like Festival Net or something. There's a website that you can look up for like festivals to play and sponsor your stuff. And I remember I saw Banana Pudding Festival. I was like, are you kidding? They got a banana pudding festival? I was like, what's hell? Where's this at? I want to go.
Didn't you play a Sparrow
I
Fest?
was about to say, I feel like I love the themes and I love the inspiration behind some festivals. And you think, why on earth is this called that? Like, why? But I don't even care why. I just want to go. And it's music, but where, you know, what's the origin? And I did a festival with my old band called Asparafest, and it was on an asparagus farm. And it was music, but it was a bit asparagus themed. So they had this giant asparagus character. So someone dressed up as a giant asparagus, and he was called Asparagus. And somewhere in the depths of my scrapbook, somewhere is a picture of me and my two bandmates with Asparagus. And I just think that was the highlight of the whole festival. Never mind playing, I didn't care about that. We were just excited to be at an asparagus festival. And I love the weird places you end up as a musician when. And every experience is just it's so it can be totally crazy or it can be unexpected or in a good or bad way, but you never quite know what's going to happen,
See,
or who you're going to meet, and it's quite an adventure. It's good.
that lends to a question then. What is a funny story of like maybe one of the weirdest things that happened to you playing at a gig?
Oh man, I go for asparagus. That was a long time ago now. Oh gosh, can you think of anything?
I one that springs to mind was I guess early days of my old folk rock band, and this is when we're kind of finding our feet, and we didn't actually have a full-time drummer. So my brother just used to like do a little kick drum when he was playing bass, you know what I mean? So we weren't too heavy. We were kind of like harmony-tastic and like, you know, a little bit chill. And we had a gig booked in London, and there was a bit of a mess up with the dates, and they were like, oh no, so you're not on this date, but can you do the Saturday? And because I don't know, we were a little wet behind the ears, we didn't really question it. We were just like, yeah, we do Saturday night in London. Yeah, this is cool, you know, we can do this. And it was a, you know, it was a good size venue as well. And we get there and we're on the lineup with, and I mean with, I say hard rock, these are kind of thrash death metal bands. And to give it, they were called, the guys who were on just before us were called Generation Graveyard. And they had like half their heads shaved and the rest was like really long. And in this venue, you're kind of stood in a little corridor like this, and people like, you go on the stage and then they walk past you and you go, you good, nice one, man, nice one. And you know, they go off and then you go on. And so the guys on before us are further up this corridor, and we're all just kind of stood in this corridor. And they've got like baby powder. And they're covering their hair with baby powder like this. And we're like, what the are you guys doing, you know? And we didn't know what they were doing. They were nice guys, you know, they're sweet, sweet like guys. And they were just like, yeah, just do it, man. And then they go on. And it was so that when they headbang under the lights, kind of creates these plumes of smoke. We're all just like watching us going, do you think they're gonna like our song about trees? You know what I mean? It was very strange, early days, but yeah, it was an experience. And Yeah, it just made me laugh a lot.
Oh, that reminds me. When I worked years ago, I worked at when I just met my wife, I worked at a place called Mardi Gras. And here in Georgia, Mardi Gras is a strip club. So I was the door guy, I was bar back, I did stuff like that. And I remember walking into the women's locker room because I had to help clean their stuff up. Baby powder was everywhere. I mean, it looked like a baby cocaine factory. You walk in and it's just everywhere. Oh, I was like, oh my God. I was like, I sat after the thing, like, what are you? Never mind. I don't even want to know what you're using it for. I show you guys. This is, you talk about a weird thing. This was me last night. I was,
Kiss.
Oh, wow.
It was a tribute band at Mad Life. They did a Kiss.
Wow.
And I'm not a Kiss fan, but they were really good.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, that's great. Yeah. They definitely look the part.
Yeah.
They had those huge heels walking around. Like, how the hell do y'all walk with that? I would fall over four times before I even got off the stage if I had to do that. I'm the most clumsy one in the whole band.
Brilliant.
Let's see. We got much time. You guys got time still? Or?
Yeah,
we're okay. Yeah. If you have, we have.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are ahead of me. I still got plenty of time. So. Well, let's hear one more song. And then what we're going to do is play like a 20 questions kind of game. I call it the Wheel of Death. It's kind of random questions, but it's fun.
Oh, right. Nice.
So what's the last song you want to share with everybody?
Let me do something.
Yeah.
What do you think?
You choose this one.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know. I just thought something off Northern Shores. I suppose we haven't done anything off here either.
Yeah.
I don't know. Help. Do you know what? This is the kind of indecisiveness that holds us up when we do rehearsals or anything like that. That's me saying, I just don't know. If I make a cup of tea and we'll decide after that. So I suppose we haven't done something.
So we'll do something off our EP Dead Ends and Hand Me Downs.
Okay.
Yeah. And all right. This was like us getting a bigger sound, and we will do Catching Crickets, which is that. So the theme of this EP was all about our childhoods in different parts of the countries and the similarities and the differences.
Okay.
And this is all about us being kids before the age of the internet, and where we would just be out and enjoying forests or on your bike or on some roller skates or anything like that. And
no mobile phones,
Your
parents couldn't even track you. Those were the days,
and the summer seemed to last forever.
This track features Griff's brother, my brother-in-law, Gavin Jameson. He's playing bass and a bit of like Hammond
and organ. a bit on the Hammond.
And the childish laughter you hear at the beginning is our nieces having a giggle. So we put them on there because we thought, you know what, they're still at that stage. They do have smartphones and they have the internet, but they are still lots of fun. And so we got them to they were giggling away on the beginning, and we thought that's the kind of energy that we wanted on it. And this is Catching Crickets.
See, here I remember my kids when they were little. They're 14, they're still young, but I mean, they were like little, like 5 years old. And I remember they were sitting here and they want to watch TV. I was like, no, get outside. Let's go catch fire. Let's go catch fireflies. We can catch fireflies. I'm going to teach you guys how to catch fireflies. So they're running there trying to catch them and hold them in their hands. And then, you know, they didn't care that they were bugs. They were just sitting there looking at them. And so from that time, every year around June, when the fireflies really start going to town, the kids still, they go outside to catch fireflies.
Beautiful.
Oh, that's really nice.
Until the bats come out to eat them. And then they're like, okay, we're done.
Oh, that sounds like a similar kind of thing. Yeah. If I wasn't catching crickets, I was catching frogs.
Yes.
So I'm going to mute us and play Catching Crickets. You guys just let me know when you're here.
Catching crickets 'cause the butterflies are gone. The said they do it with me, but I guess that I'm the only one. Playing tic-tac-toe with a stick in the sand. My brother is in trouble cause he let go of my hand. But we're only catching crickets cause the butterflies are gone. Ooh. Faster, but the boys give me the run around. Four wheels, eight wheels, jump on the back. Let me take you with me because we know where it's at. And I'm racing on two wheels and I'm headed for the ups and downs. Ooh.
That's funny. That's a very good. I love the rocks. It's a rock sound. It's like a rock song almost.
Yeah. We got there. I'm playing a bit of electric guitar on that one, actually. Yeah.
I think that grew and grew. And it kind of. So if we do that live, which we don't often anymore, it's the two of us with the vocals and just that plucked violin.
Yeah.
And it's really quite sparse, but energetic. But we just kept adding bits to it, didn't we? Stuff. So. We just had fun.
I think you're playing on a comb, aren't you?
I was I was doing that rhythm. Yeah. I can't even make the noise. Like trying to be
sound effects. That's the question. What is the sound in here?
So I was doing the bits of percussion.
A pen on a comb.
On just a comb, you know, for your hair. And it was a pen, and I was running it like that down it because it has that crickety sound.
Yeah.
That was a fun experimental day of what percussion can we use to make some different sounds.
Yeah.
But that's part of the fun is to try it out, see if it works.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there listening to it, and I got the with a Hammond, and I'm thinking electric, like Iron Butterfly. I'm like, okay.
All right.
I was like, that would be so cool. And there's a song I remember as I let my kids listen to it. I used to, when they were in middle school, I would drive them to school and I would blare the radio and I'd play like embarrassing songs just to embarrass their kids. I embarrassed them in middle school. Yeah. Got to lighten the mood. And there was a band called Green Jelly and they did the Three Little Pigs. And it was like, but it's a heavy metal, Three Little Pigs, like, let me in. Not by the way. I mean, it's hilarious. And I remember when I was in school, and so I played it for them. It kind of reminded me of that kind of stuff.
Nice.
Brilliant.
I like that. That was a really, really fun one.
Oh, cool.
So we're going to do the Wheel of Death. But before we do that, Tell everybody where they can find you, your social media, all that stuff.
Oh, cool. If you look for Elizabeth and Jameson in any sort of Google or search engine, we should come up. But go to our website and there's links to all our socials. And that's Elizabeth and, that's the word and, not the ampersand, jameson.co.uk.
Yeah. We do Facebook and Instagram and occasionally Twitter. X.
Twitter. Oh, it's X now. Well, yeah, yeah.
Twitter. So that's kind of us. That's where we draw the line social media wise. We think we're not sure if we can really take any more platforms than that, to be honest. If you type in Hannah and Griff, we might come up to you. Yeah. But, you know, you can find us and follow us and go listen to our tracks online. You can, we're on things like Spotify and things. That's my only one that's at the top of my head.
Yeah.
Is that enough?
That's brilliant.
That'll do.
See, that's TikTok is one that everybody uses. And I know that it's like the necessary evil. But it's so much work to do all these things. I'm like,
definitely.
It's hard. It's real. It's real. It's a whole other job, really. It's hard.
I think the people who tend to book us and buy or even listen to our music are certainly not using TikTok. So I think the bulk of our audience are use Facebook. To be honest with you,
maybe Instagram.
A little bit of Instagram, but it's mainly Facebook on social media. And we still have like an old school mail out on email for a lot, which is really good for us.
Go to our website and sign up for emails. We don't send that many, to be honest, but you can get a little mail shot of news every kind of quarter, sort of the year maybe, and. We like a good old chat, as you can tell. You can just write to us and say hello if you want.
Yeah.
That's what I like. I like those kind of avenues because the newer stuff, I have no clue. I've got an email for the podcast. You go to georgiasongbirds.com and join the email list, but I don't send the email, so I don't know if you get any. You ain't got to worry about me spamming you. I don't know how to do it. Oh, God, I've had so much fun.
All right. Yeah, likewise. Good chat.
The time has flown. I don't know. It has for me. I can't believe it's like, we could have. We would have chatted all night if we'd had time over there, like I said. So it's good we've had a chance to chat now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I still got time. So we're not done. I'm just. Like I said, we will get long winded. You let me know anytime you got to do you got to do. But here's some random questions for you guys now.
Okay.
And I say random because it's like a 20 question app.
Okay.
Do you not know what's going to come up then?
I don't know how many questions I put in here. I hit spin the wheel and it just goes. So the first question, what's one secret you still keep from your parents?
Oh.
Well, I don't tend to tell my parents when I've eaten something really bad for dinner or a meal because I know that they'll just say, oh, for goodness sake, what are you doing? And then they'll tell Griff off saying like, why did you let her eat a chocolate bar for dinner? So I don't know, that's come to me. It's not a secret, but if they're just like, oh, you know, did you have something nice for dinner? And I'm thinking, I had a massive bar of chocolate. And I'll say, oh yeah, I had a chicken pasta with salad on the side. But in my head, I'm like, nah, I had a chocolate bar.
I think just, for how long I used to smoke. I kept it from them for years. I don't smoke anymore, but I kept that. I think when they did find out, I was like, oh yeah, it was only like a year, downplayed it,
It's funny, Hannah's came out to food. We had a girl on the show. Her name is, her episode just released. Her name is Lala. And she came out, and it's the way she said it. It was so funny because her parents owned steakhouses. And she says she had to sit down with her family and have a come out party. And she said it the way she said it, like it was like she was gay, but no, she came out as a vegetarian. So she had to come out as a vegetarian to her steakhouse parents. And so she said they would literally like sprinkle meat in her food when she wasn't looking.
No. Oh, no.
Wow.
Parents will do whatever they want to, kids. You know that.
I love it.
If you had a time machine, where would you go?
Oh, where would I go?
I guess this is just this is top of your head, isn't it? Yeah. Like the longer I have to think about something, the more I might change my mind because I'm indecisive as you go, but I might have the same answer as you.
All right. I got a Woodstock, man. Oh, yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, we watched the documentary, the Beatles, where they had all the footage from, help me.
The Get Back
documentary. Yeah. And we watched it all and it was like fly on the wall and they had so much footage and just watching them in the studio and stuff. And I was watching all the people in the background just working at the studio, even if they were just bringing them coffee, like runners and stuff, or I don't know. And I just thought, I just love to be there and just soak that up. And they played that concert on the roof and they were interviewing all the people in the street saying, what do you think about it? And I was just like, oh, I just love to be there and just soak that up. And that's whatever, 1960 something. 1960s London, Abbey Road Studios, just to see, just to be there and to wear the really cool clothes.
That was.
Yeah.
There you go. Another question for you guys.
Oh, I'm scared.
Okay. We know you guys are amazing singer-songwriters. The harmonies are great. If somebody else could sing your song, who would you want to sing them?
I would love, there's Aeneas Mitchell, Sarah Jarosz, and Sarah Watkin. They do a trio called I'm With Her. I would love to hear their harmonies on one of our songs.
Nice.
Yeah, man.
I was just saying, anything that has great harmonies. I can't think of another duo that, I mean, we listen to a lot of stuff. I mean, one of my favorite vocals, I love Alison Krauss's voice. And when she sings with others as well, so she could, like, she could sing my part and Griffy, you could keep your part. Right. She could do a little duet and I'd just be like, this is great. I'll just, you know, listen to you guys. I'd go, she's one of my favorite female vocals, I think.
Yeah.
I love Alison Krauss. My wife took me to the Alison Krauss and Robert Plant show in Alabama.
Oh, yeah. Love those albums.
Oh, so amazing.
They were actually so amazing. I'll just change it to Alison Krauss, Robert Plant then.
Oh, yeah.
Go they on. Can do it as they a duo. There you go.
They sounded so, see, that's what I love about like the older artists. And I say the older is they sounded like the record. You couldn't tell much of a difference. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So now people like I told my wife and my kids, if I ever win the lottery, I'm going to open up a record company. And the one thing is I'm scouting that they have to be able to do. And if you ever hear live, you get to do it is play live.
Because
that's a big part of,
Yeah,
of the journey. I mean, you had to be great. Not if you're starting out. I don't care. But if you've been playing, like you guys, anybody who when you come back to the States, come to Georgia, I'm telling you, I can get you guys some playing time. And get you some free food, a little bit of money, and get you guys some gifts.
You
guys are awesome live. That's a given. And it's the harmonies. And harmonies are hard. I can't do harmonies. I'll let you guys hear one of my songs where I actually harmonized with myself and I'm so proud. I was like, oh, I did it. I couldn't do it live because how am I going to do a 3-piece harmony with just me? It's like I run with the microphone, each put it here, and like,
yeah.
I wish I could throw my voice that way. Where do you see you guys in, say, 5 to 10 years?
We talk about this sometimes because. Yeah. It's good, isn't it? Talk about what do you want to do next? What could we try to do? I don't know. I don't want to answer for both of us. I would like to still be being creative, but I don't, if it's not performing, it could be just doing the writing part or it could be doing more recording.
Yeah.
And I think we've got a little bit more into recording recently, but we don't really have a designated space to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We have, you know, the front room or whatever, where we just get all the equipment out. The shape of the room lends itself well to what we want to do because which is sound wise, it's okay, but it's to have a dedicated space where you can go and do that work. Mm. We both think we would absolutely love to do that, which we don't have now. So So I reckon it would be nice to have, you know, a place we could call the studio.
Yeah.
And we could put all our like nice pictures up on the wall and all our little music memorabilia bits.
Yeah.
You know, our postcards from Nashville.
That's what I'm building behind me is this. I'm building my own studio.
Right.
Yeah, so I'll see it's that, and we can see a little bit of, yeah, like you said, it's, you can see it's a room. Even if it's not finished, you can see it's being built for music stuff.
Yeah,
you've got your gear there. You've got, you know, like a space where you enter that space, and it's to be creative. I think I'd love to have. Yeah. Oh yeah. It is. Oh yeah. I can see the walls have got like some kind of, I want to say padding. I don't know what that is. What is that?
Insulation. That's insulation.
Insulation. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. For me, I'd love to have a space, and even if we weren't recording, it's studio space. You can play, you can write, you can rehearse. You have a space to go and work, but creatively. And we don't have that space right now. I'd love to have that in the next 5 years, and still hopefully be playing.
Yeah, but
as long as we're enjoying it.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. That's, are you the same?
Yeah, that's exactly the same.
Well, that could have been awkward. So I'm glad about that.
I got one more question for you guys. I always end on this question. What's the best advice that you've ever received?
Musical or not musical?
Doesn't matter. Just whatever comes to mind.
Eat a healthy dinner, Hannah.
No more chocolate.
No, that is good advice, but it might not be the best.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm drawing it to music and performing. I remember an old actor actually used to say to me, "You're not nervous, you're excited," and you need to tell yourself that. And because it's the, and they were saying, you know, and they kind of broke it down for me, saying, you know, the butterflies in your stomach for nervousness are the same butterflies as when you're excited, and so you need to tell yourself that, and then you can ride a little wave and you keep your nerves under control. And I think that really helped me. Yeah.
I like that. That's really good. Reba McEntire got asked that question one time. She goes, "Do you get nervous?" She goes, "Yeah, I still get nervous." And this is Reba McEntire.
Yeah.
So everybody gets, now I have a bonus question for you guys, 'cause it made me think of that. I have a buddy, he started the band Trick Pony, and he has a weird, like a ritual before he goes on to sing. He'll eat Lay's potato chips, but only Lay's. Do you guys have like a weird kind of warm up or vocal trick that you guys do before singing?
No, I don't know. We're really, really slack at that.
I actually think that we're a bit, I don't know whether the word is lazy, because we're not. We do try hard to get things right and present ourselves well. So it's not like not wanting to. I don't know if we're that great at having a routine. There's no routine to it. Like, so it's not like we have to do that and that, and we have to leave enough time for that.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's loads of spare time. Sometimes there's nothing. I mean,
I think unofficially, rather than go through a routine, we do like to get to a place in plenty of time to just soak up wherever it is we are. And, you know, sometimes you're in what is like the back room of like a pub or a bar. And, you know, you're kind of just setting up like the one microphone and you're huddling around, or it's a big theater space. You know, I like to get there early. I think that's my routine, certainly.
Sensible.
Yeah.
You're such a good influence on me. Not only do I eat healthier dinners now, but you encourage me to get to places on time. This is good, which I might struggle with otherwise. I don't know. I think unofficially, I do think more often than not, I say to myself, just, like, it's okay, you guys, I can do that. It's like, you can do this.
Because
sometimes we do get nervous, or you don't know if people are going to like what you're doing. It's your own music, and they don't know you necessarily. You're just hoping they will. And I think, no, we're here, and we're going to, you know, it's going to be just kind of be positive vibes, like give them out. Don't be, try not to be negative and go, "Oh, I'm really worried," or, you know, "What if I fall over on stage?" Oh, no. Don't say those things out loud. Just positive thoughts, really.
Yeah.
And check that I've put rosin on my bow.
Yeah. There you go.
That's practical.
That reminds me of the Charlie Daniels, rosin the bow. Yeah. Rosin the bow if we played.
Yeah. rod in the bow and check the violins in tune, because yeah, that excuse won't work every time.
Exactly.
Guys, I've had so much fun.
We have. It's been really good. We've had a good old chat. It's flown by. Thanks very much for chatting to us.
Yeah. Of course. We'll talk a little bit off air, but before we do that, tell everybody one more time where they can find you, the best place to go.
Best place to go would be our website, Elizabeth and Jameson as one big word, .co.uk.
All right. Everybody, this is the Georgia Songbirds, and that was Elizabeth and Jameson. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.